This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. You're listening to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight. We are the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. I want to thank all our listeners, our loyal listeners, been with us for over a year. Thank you very much. And also to our new listeners, don't forget, do us a favor, share it. If you like the show, share it, and that way more people get a chance to listen, and we get the show out to as many people as possible in the game of baseball. Also, don't forget, Caliendo Sports is heading to several countries, Japan, Italy, Cuba, Dominican Republic, with players and coaches. We're competing in those areas. If you want to be part of that, it's a great international sports experience. You will not regret it. It is awesome. It's one of the best experiences anybody could have, whether it's players or parents or coaches. Email me at petercaliendo@att.net. And the show continues no matter what, even in as we air it here in Chicago. We are in our studio, but outside it is 45 below. It's not baseball weather, but we keep it rolling in these warm studios. So hopefully it'll warm up a little bit. And we have a great show for you. We are going to get into probably, who knows, depending what area you're looking at, probably the most important areas of any sports area when it comes to development, and that is the mental game. We've had other shows on the mental game, but we keep doing them because it's such an important area, especially for our very young kids, the youth. It's the mental part's the part where if they can't deal with failure, they're just going to quit the sport. They're going to find something a lot easier. So we're going to talk about that on the show today. We got a great guest. I will give you a quick background, and the show is Zach Brandon. And I told myself 1,000 times, make sure you don't call him Brandon Zach, because that's easy to do. He's got two first names. He's got two last names also. So make sure I call him Zach Brandon, coordinator of mental skills for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's going to be exciting. Now, Zach played at Linfield College under head coach Scott Brosius, a member of the 2013 Division III National Championship team. Received a master's degree in kinesiology with a focus in sports psychology, Cal State Fullerton. Guess who he worked under, studied under, and was one of the last students to work with our great, great friend who's been on the show twice, Ken Revizza, what we call the godfather of mental training. So it's going to be exciting. And he was also with IMG, the famous school down in Florida, as a mental coach. And there he was a mental conditioning coach, and he worked with all kinds of sports. So that's exciting too. Baseball, basketball, track and field, and tennis. So this is going to be exciting. We're looking forward to it. So let's get to it right away. Let's get to the show so we can start learning immediately. Let's welcome Zanon Brandon. How are you, Zach? How's everything?
Zach, I'm doing great, Pete. It's good to. I'm really excited to be on the podcast with you today and kind of converse with you. And I've just been really impressed with all the guests that you've had on the podcast, gotten a chance to listen to it, and then what you've done for the game of baseball and coaches, not just here in the U.S. but really across the world. So really excited to chat with you today.
Well, I appreciate that a lot, Zach. I got to tell you, I went to your Twitter several times and, I follow you. And, what's interesting is you've done a lot and you're a young man and you've done a lot so far. So your future seems to be as bright as anybody in the game. Tell us how you got started a little bit, just to give the audience a little idea, because, what I'm seeing, and especially in Major League Baseball, I'm seeing a lot of young guys, and I love seeing it because they open up your minds and, give you a fresh look into a lot of things.
Yeah. So my, as you kind of mentioned, I grew up in Oregon, that's home, and grew up playing different sports, baseball being the one that I gravitated to pretty early, and ended up going to Linfield and got a chance to be a part of some really great teams there and be coached by what I thought was just a first class coaching staff there at Linfield, and learned a lot about the game and really just learned a lot about life and myself during my time there. And as I was playing baseball and going to school, I was studying psychology and happened to enroll in an intro to sports psychology class. And that was kind of my introduction, if you will, to the mental game, and got to read Heads Up Baseball by Ken Revisa, and started to apply that to my game in college, and definitely saw a lot of immediate impact and positive just positive influence on my career, and something I decided I wanted to go and pursue, and felt like there was really no better place to do it than in Southern California at Cal State Fullerton, and studied kinesiology there, study of human movement, but focused in sports psychology, and just learned a great deal from our mentors and our faculty who we had there. Obviously, people in the baseball community are pretty familiar with Ken and, you know, his work in the game. And, but also we had several other faculty there that were just tremendous people and really good practitioners across a variety of different domains. So I say that I'm very grateful to be in the position that I'm at now, a few years later here with the Diamondbacks. But I think ultimately nobody kind of reaches wherever they at or their success alone. And I've had just some tremendous mentors and people that have kind of helped guide me in my career. So I'm very, very grateful for that. So very grateful to have stumbled into the field.
All right. Well, it sounds like you didn't stumble in. It sounds like you're, you know, nobody gets to the Diamondbacks, which is a very good organization, without having some talent and what they're doing. So explain to us, you know, tell our audience, because I think, you know, from a collegiate level and even, the pro level, tell them a little bit about what your responsibility is going to be with the Diamondbacks, you know, and, you know, some of the things you're going to have to be working on while you know, during the season.
Yeah. One thing that's really exciting about baseball is it's been one of the sports that there's actually been a lot of receptivity towards mental skills, coaches and kind of the mental side of the game. And so right now there's over 2/3 of the organizations in baseball that employ a mental skills coach on their staff or a sports psychologist or practitioner in the field. Several of them have several people involved in that program. So I think it's really exciting. Arizona was in a position where they had some previous people in kind of a consultant role and hadn't really had it really kind of internally built into the system. And that was something that our front office staff was kind of looking to do in the off season. And so, you know, I was fortunate that my name was kind of brought to their attention. So interviewed and really kind of my responsibility is to kind of oversee the development and implementation of our mental skills training program across the organization. So we've got all of our different affiliates, and then obviously the major league level, our Dominican Academy. And so my role is to oversee that vision and kind of develop what we think will be kind of the framework for our mental skills program. So that can be not only like what a lot of people think of as like the content and the kind of the core pillars of it, but also what does that look like in practice? In other words, how do we train these skills? How do we build it into, you know, maybe the daily routines that our guys are already maybe doing or things like that. And so my job is to kind of, be kind of oversee it. And we have a staff that has two other individuals as well. And so I'm really excited and I'm still in my infancy here with the Diamondbacks, still learning. And, you know, so far it's been me kind of just getting a feel for professional baseball and what our coaches, what our staff members and what our players have, what their experiences have been with mental skills and what they've liked and maybe areas of potential growth and different opportunities. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of exciting ideas. And the best part is we have a blank canvas where we can kind of create whatever program that we think will fit best with this organization. So, I'm excited to kind of be a part of that.
Wow, Zach, talk about a big responsibility overseeing a training program when it comes to mental skills. Now, what does that mean? Okay, you're going to lay out a program, then you've got to educate certain people. Now, those people are going to be some guys like yourself that might be at some of the different levels, and that's also the coaches that become mental skills people too.
Yeah, 100%. That was something for me personally was really important from day one, was to talk to our coaches and to our staff, you know, from the strength coaches to our athletic trainers, anybody that's kind of in the trenches, so to speak, with our players on a day-to-day basis, because I tell them whether they want to or not, like they become mental coaches in their work as well. You know, whether you got an athlete in the treatment room before a game, or you got a player that's, you know, struggling a little bit and a coach is working with him in the cage. I mean, those are moments where it's usually nothing physical. It's you know, a lot of times it can be linked to something that's going on in their approach or just their mindset. So for me, it's been essential to kind of just come in and ask a lot of questions and get a feel for, again, what our coaches are seeing and honor their experience and kind of, you know, offer up some ideas and ways that we could potentially implement this program. And I've been very, very fortunate thus far of we've had so many coaches just be incredibly supportive of our involvement within the organization. And they're excited to see this department grow and see how we can influence not just our players, but I think also in a lot of ways we're here to support our staff and our coaches as well. So it's essential, like you said.
Well, you know what? I say it's never too late. Obviously, you know, baseball's been an old-fashioned traditional game. We're now starting to see many changes. You know, if I had a crystal ball, obviously, you know, we'd all start our coaches, you know, 100 years ago in mental training and then go and revert to the mechanics later, because it seems to be that, you know, when you're in a game where you're failing more times than succeeding, you know, the mental part has to be at the top of your list. So it's great that it's there. And what I want to do is I want to start just briefly with some young players before we get to the high school, college, and professional level on some of the things to do. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, the game, you know, kids drop out of the sport because, you know, number one reason is that they're not having fun, and a lot of it has to do with the failure of the game. So talk to our volunteers, talk to our parents a little bit, talk to people that are working with young kids. You know, I know they can't be experts in this, but what are some suggestions and recommendations that you can give those coaches that'll help kids stay in the game longer?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think one of the things that kind of comes to mind initially is it's important to obviously try to understand, you know, this kind of new generation of ball player. You know, if you kind of look at the research, there, the term that they're tossing out is Generation Z, which is pretty much anybody who's born, you know, 1995 or later, which is really any coach who's at the youth level, any coach who's in the collegiate level. I mean, that pretty much is the majority of the players that we're working with. And there's some really interesting trends that research is showing when it comes to this population. So I think one of the things that initially jumps out is, and this was something that really struck me when I first saw it, is that you actually don't see a lot of kids nowadays getting their happiness from their sport simply through its participation. In other words, they don't really view sport as intrinsically motivating anymore. There's a lot of kids who see it as a tool or a trade, and they get their happiness or their feelings of other satisfaction in their sport participation from improving their skill set, which, you know, in some ways is like, that's a great thing because that's going to push them to work really hard, and they're going to be very driven in some ways. But also there's like the dark side to that. And that's where, you know, when they start to fail, like you said, in a game that's built around failure, now all of a sudden they start to feel as though they start to identify as a failure, as opposed to, you know, this one particular instance, I failed in this particular moment, but that doesn't mean that I'm a failure as a person. I think that's one thing that I find really interesting is for us as coaches or parents, it's helping kids today develop a kind of a healthier relationship with failure, and helping them understand that just because you fail at a task doesn't mean that you're a failure as a person. And, you know, it's kind of seeing it from how can I use failure as a learning opportunity, you know, and if something all of a sudden doesn't go my way, you know, you think about, is this obstacle happening to me or for me? You know, that's a very subtle shift in wording, but it has a massive, you know, massive influence on how we, what we learn from failure and whether we use failure ultimately to grow. And so, and I think there's some really actually pretty good examples of that already in baseball. I mean, you know, you can take the Astros, for example. I mean, they're, you know, in 2014 when SI pumps out a cover that has George Springer on it and they say, you know, they're going to be the World Series champions in 2017. I mean, that seems crazy coming off of the year that they had. And by creating a culture that was very growth oriented and hungry to learn and utilize failure in that process, they've obviously been able to create, you know, some incredible results and, you know, make a really significant change in their organization's culture. So, you know, I think that's one big thing for me is, helping kids develop, a different relationship with failure in one sense. And I think that's the other thing that becomes really interesting with that is you're starting to see a shift in how players are trained a little bit. And I think we saw this a little bit at ABCA where you're starting to hear more and more coaches talk about the importance of challenging players in practice. You know, historically, baseball has been a sport where in the practice setting, it's significantly easier than what they're being asked to do in a game situation. You know, they talk a lot about like feel good BP. And there's certainly a time and a place for feel good. But at the same time, if all you ever see is, you know, this straight fastball at the same speed over and over and same amount of reps every day, like that just, that doesn't look anything like what you're then going to be asked to do. And so as a result, it's kind of created, a little bit of this like showcase mentality. You know, a lot of kids are, they're going to showcases and they're more focused on proving how good they are as opposed to like improving their abilities. And again, that's like a very subtle shift in wording, but it has some really big implications for how our players are growing and developing.
You know, it's interesting. I love what you said. And the one area that I wanted to highlight was the part where, you know, boy, I mean, I really believe in this, and that's challenging players in practice. And I know you got to be careful at younger ages. You know, there's got to be a point where first they work on their fundamentals, and then, you know, you begin to challenge them. And one area that I relate to in this is my work in Japan, because at the young age groups, boy, they make it tough on them at the young groups, you know, when they're practicing. You know, that way it is much easier when it comes to the game aspect. Now, what about, you know, you got mom and dad, or you got a volunteer coach, or you got a younger coach, and, you know, players, you know, you're trying to do your best, obviously, within practice to instill this culture of learning to deal with failure so that way it's easier in the game. But what about the ones that don't practice a lot and yet now kids are failing in games? Are there any recommendations how to deal with that in an actual game when a player comes back to the dugout and you can tell he's, you know, he's had a tough time. He doesn't understand what's happening. He's having a hard time dealing with it. Any recommendations there?
Yeah. One of the, you know, if you start to look at players who are able to perform at a really high level consistently, you know, Joe Maddon talks about this a lot of like the importance of being present and playing in the moment. And, you know, if you look at like the research on like, you know, being in the zone or in flow or whatever term you want to use, all of those individuals, there's just this complete and utter like singular focus on the task at hand. You know, in baseball, the lowest common denominator is the next pitch. Like that's the only thing that we truly have control over. And so one of the ways that I think it becomes really important, whether you're a parent or your coach, is helping players commit to their process. In other words, like, can you commit to your process in a game where it's built around results? There's a box score at the end of every night telling you allegedly, you know, this is how well you did. You got to be able to commit to your process. And for me, like the process is, you know, anything you can control where your feet are. You know, you have to be able to stay in the moment. So I think with that in mind, one of the things that becomes really important is what kind of questions are we asking players after maybe they don't perform the way they want to do. I think there's a ton of value and a ton of power in the questions that we ask. You know, and asking them things like, You know, what were you focusing on that particular pitch? Did you see the pitch? I mean, if they, you know, that's usually, I think, a good first question to start with, because if they mm-hmm. don't even see the pitch, doesn't matter how beautiful their swing was or how good of a plan they had. I mean, if you don't see the pitch, that's kind of step one. And so, you know, it's being really intentional about, you know, what questions are you asking them? And then in that moment also, okay, well, what did you learn from it? I stole this idea from the director of mental strength for the Pirates, and I just love the concept. And he talks a lot about at the end of a game, or even you can do it after an at bat, like asking a player, like, give me 3 ups, 2 downs, 1 takeaway. Like at the end of a game, like, you know, tell me 3 things that you did well, 2 things that you wish you would have done better, and what's your 1 takeaway moving on for the next at bat that you can, or your next game to improve that. Now you may not necessarily have to do all of that after every single at bat. Maybe it's just give me 1 up, 1 down and 1 takeaway for the next. But I think that's a really good way to challenge players, because so many of our like kids, especially, we get very focused on the outcome and they think, okay, I lined out, I'm 0-for-1. That means it was a bad at bat, and that's what they label it as. Whereas maybe, you know, you stuck with your approach and you committed and you swung at the pitch that you wanted to swing at in your zone, or whatever the case might be. You got to be able to kind of pull out and hunt the good stuff in each of those at bats. And I think that's where coaches and parents in particular just play a really important role in that, is, you know, the questions that they're asking and challenging the kids to, you know, hunt the good stuff. In other words, like, tell me, challenge them. And that can be a really hard thing. It's like, if I were to ask anybody in the last week, you know, tell me all the things that you wish you had done better, you're going to give me a list of whatever it is. And then tell me all the things that you did really well. Typically, which list is longer? You know, usually it's the first one. People can rattle off all sorts of different things that they wish they had maybe done a little bit better. So it's in our nature to tend to drift more and be kind of more, you know, the negativity bias and focus on the negative. So, you know, the questions that we ask and helping kind of shift the perspective of our athletes is, I think, a really good first step to kind of changing that relationship with failure.
You know, that's great stuff for our parents and coaches, and I love that. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, going back 37 years in coaching, you know, I can tell you, we used to coach where it was the coach and the parent. And parents, you know, I'm a parent, you know, we have a tendency to, you know, tell players or kids what to do and what they're doing wrong and how to correct it. And we're shifting all that. We're, you know, we're putting the onus almost on the player and asking them. And I think that's something important for parents to understand, so that way the player is part of the process, part of the learning aspect, part of the development. Now, Zach, I got to tell you, one area that can be tough is, and this seems to be shifting a little bit, you know, when do you tell kids that they're doing really well, and when do you tell them when they're not doing so well? There's got to be a fine line, because sometimes we tend to tell them, you know, some people tend to say things when they're, you know, a lot of things they're doing bad, but then also they're also mentioning sometimes too many times that you're doing so well that, you know, then the player has nothing to work on.
Yeah. This is a good question, a really good question. It's something that, you know, we've been kind of having, you know, I've had this conversation now over the last couple of years, because again, you're starting to see a shift in how practice is being done, of like, you know, how do you balance the feel good versus the practice that's actually challenging you and just beyond your, you know, your skill set, where, you know, you may not be performing as well. I think, you know, I think one of my approaches for it is, I, as a mental coach, I always believe that, you know, the most important pitching coach, if you're a pitcher, the most important pitching coach you've ever had, is yourself. Like, right, as a pitcher, like, you're the one that's been with yourself, you know, your entire life. So for me, there's 2 things that become kind of really important, is helping train a player to be not only a performer and a competitor on the mound, but then also a coach as well. And so I think I tend to default to questions again a lot and asking them like, okay, hey, when you're performing well, like, what are you doing? Like, tell me like what's your thought process? What's your approach? What are you doing in preparation for a game? What's that routine kind of look like? So I think what I've tried to shift in is when you start to have players who are doing really well, it's can I shine a light on that? You know, can I create some awareness around, you know, what they're doing well? Like, there's the phrase of like, I either win or I learn, which I'm actually like not a big fan at all of that phrase, because I think what it ends up doing is the wording basically says then I don't actually learn from our successes. And so I think from my point of view, it's been, can I shine a light on things that players are doing really well and raise some awareness around that? And then for those that aren't, can I create some ways for them to see that they're, you know, maybe they are making strides in a way that they hadn't realized it. So, you know, I, to be honest, I'm probably darting a little bit around your question in a sense, but I think when it comes to the players who are doing well, for me, it's like, how can I, you know, sometimes those are blind spots. How can I shine a light or, you know, reflect back, like, and ask a question that allows them to better understand, like, this is what my process was. Because we tend to be so results driven. As much as I care about what you accomplish, I want to understand how you accomplish that and ask the right question that enables you to understand that too.
Got it. I got that. And now everything that we've so far that we've talked about, just for our audience too, because we're going to have high school, college, pro guys on there. Does it change depending what level you're at?
That's a good question. I don't know, in some ways if I'm the best person to ask that. Like, so at IMG, I've worked very predominantly with youth, you know, kind of guys who are 18 and under and have experience, prior to that working with college guys and now a little bit with, you know, with pro guys as well. You know, in some ways I think there might be differences, but at the same time, I do actually genuinely think there's a lot of overlap in different ways. You know, I think what in some ways you have is professional guys who have, yeah, they may have a lot more experience, but they also have a lot more time kind of reflecting on that experience. They tend to be a little bit more self-aware. And they've, you know, kind of spent some time being really intentional. I think that's one of the things you see very quickly when it comes to, you know, professional guys, maybe comparing them to lower levels is, guys are very intentional about, you know, how they go about their work. And I think that's something that, so as a result, then as a mental coach, you know, I have to take that into account and, you know, the questions that I may ask or, the things that I might try to point out, I'm taking that into account a little bit, is that these guys, honestly, in a lot of cases, they know 95% of what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. It's helping them figure out, okay, what's maybe that 5% or that 1% that they hadn't really thought of or that they weren't aware of that allows them just to make that small incremental gain in their performance.
You know, and you may have mentioned a couple of them, two or three of them, but let's continue on this. Let's talk about, you know, mistakes that, you know, coaches like myself or professional coaches, some of the mistakes that we may make when it comes to the mental part of the game and how we're dealing with players. Are there other things that we need to learn to do differently nowadays, you know, with the new generation of players, as you stated earlier?
Yeah, that's another good question. I think one of the things that, you know, I've just had several conversations with people, in the coaching world, like coaches who have just got a wealth of experience and I've learned a ton in a short amount of time from them. And one of the things that we've been kind of grappling with a little bit is there's this balance that, like if you're trying to create this culture that's very growth oriented and it's this learning environment, one of the challenges with that though is a lot of people tend to default to, well, then I need to give continuous feedback. And one of the challenges is, you know, you have this younger generation that crave immediate feedback. You know, they want to see kind of instant results. They want to see instantly that what they're doing is paying off. Otherwise, you know, in some cases you could potentially lose them. Mm-hmm. And where that I think gets really tricky for coaches is then, you know, let's take batting practice, for example. You know, the traditionally, you know, I can speak to just my own personal experience and stuff and had great coaches, but also think of how much feedback coaches give during a traditional batting practice. Sure. You know, and there's sometimes this notion of like, I need to give, I'm seeing this, so I have to say it. I have to give this player this feedback in order for them to learn and grow. And I think sometimes less is more. You know, I think great coaches, they don't say as much as possible. They say as little as needed. Mm. You know, they simplify it. And I think what ends up kind of happening sometimes is if we're continuously spoon feeding guys, they're unable to kind of become their own coach on the field. You know, last time I checked, I've never seen a coach standing with a pitcher on the mound or in the batter's box during a game. You know, like that's not going to, I think, change anytime soon. And so for coaches, we have to train our players to be able to make those adjustments on their own. And I think some of that is we have to be careful with sometimes spoon feeding the feedback that we give them. And there's a balance and there's a time. And, you know, some guys you may know that you can give them a little bit more because they're going to be able to pull out the nuggets for them that allow them to then go and perform their best. But, you know, other guys, they get up there and every little feedback that you've given them, that's now what's circulating through their head when they're in the box. You know, and I love the visual and like heads up baseball where they got a pitcher on the mound and their the brain is just the baseball. Like that's it. Like that's all he's focused on, you know, is just seeing and executing. And that's really what we're trying to do is simplify their thoughts. And sometimes that can get lost and it can get cloudy with like the more feedback that we give them. So I do see that actually being, you know, a big challenge that, you know, I don't necessarily have any great answers with per se, but I think it's something that the more we can become aware of, okay, what type of feedback are we giving our players and are we creating the environment in a way that allows them to discover those answers on their own? There's a really good video of Giancarlo Stanton and Alex Rodriguez talking about like how they would take batting practice and they would talk about, you know, they'd be trying to hit the ball gap to gap and they would choose a sign, one of the signs in the outfield, and they'd basically do target practice. And they would basically use the ball as their feedback, you know, and kind of self-organize and create whatever solutions that they needed in order to accomplish that task. Whereas, you know, there's some, the traditional model has been, let me tell a guy what he needs to do with his hands or with his lower half or something more internal. And that's usually where, you know, guys start to struggle. And so I think some of that goes back to just being really intentional about how are we giving feedback? Sometimes less is more. And how can we maybe set up the environment in a way that produces the results that we're looking for our players?
You know, and that gets into something you talked about, you know, the, integrating a mental training in practice. You just gave a great example during batting practice. Give our coaches a couple more examples, if you could think of them, you know, when it comes to, you know, whether you're working with infielders, whether you're working with pitchers within a practice. What are some things that, you know, coaches ought to be looking to do with some of those aspects of the game so that way it's more, you know, training environment than rather just telling them what to do?
Yeah. So this is something that I'm like very personally, very passionate about. Because I think again, as I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of openness to the mental side of the game and mental training in baseball. And what I think you've seen with that is there's a lot more coaches who are starting to, you know, talk about the mental game with their players or bring in somebody who can speak on that. Which I think is great and it's a great foundation. But one of my favorite parts of Heads Up Baseball 2.0, the new book, was they talked about there's three levels to mastering the mental game. You got to learn it, you got to practice it, and you got to own it. And I think we've seen a shift where a lot of the level one, we're pretty good at it. We're doing a really good job of teaching and educating our players on different mental skills, But where I think there's actually a big disconnect is how do we integrate that into practice? Mm-hmm. And this was something, you know, ABCA is a fantastic event every year. The sports psychology community has an annual conference as well. And last year it was in Toronto. And so they had Mark Shapiro, president of the Blue Jays, speak. And one of the questions that he was asked was, hey, you know, what's the next frontier in the game? And what's the next frontier with the mental training? And he said, it's the integration into practice. It's the integration into the training environment. So I think that's something that I'm really passionate about. And, you know, after this conversation, it's something that I always look forward to chatting with coaches more about and exploring ideas. So some of the ones that I've, you know, either tried out or talked to coaches about, like, so I'll stick with that focus example. You know, I love to ask guys, okay, when you've had your A game, what were you thinking about? What were you focused on? You know, and 90% of them will say, you know, I don't remember. I wasn't really thinking about anything, right, is usually what the answer is. And I might say, okay, great. Now when you've got your C game, or your game is, you're scuffling a little bit, you're struggling, what do you tend to focus on? And a lot of guys will be very quick to say, you know, I start thinking about my mechanics, how my body's feeling, you know, knowing that I don't have 100% that day, whatever. And I say, okay, now let's think about practice. What percentage of the time do you tend to focus more internally on, like, things like your mechanics? And historically, that proportion has been pretty, you know, disproportionate to the internal stuff. And I said, so in essence, you're telling me you've trained in a way that goes against when you performed your best, it goes against what you were telling yourself or what you were focused on. And so for me, one of the things that I like to do is try to help our guys be more external when they're either on the mound or at the plate. So like the Stanton one, that's a good hitting example. A pitching one that I stole this from a college pitching coach that I just thought it was a great idea. We were talking about this, and he said, one of the things that I'll do is he puts like little stickers on the catcher with different colors. And he says he uses that as kind of like a visual target for pitchers, so that way they can focus more on executing pitches and not be so focused on, okay, this is what I need to do with my hand speed or my delivery. It's more me, this is where I'm trying, this is the outcome of what I'm driving towards and where I want the ball to end up. And these are some visual aids that will help me kind of create that. And I thought that was just a great idea. So
yeah, I love that. Go ahead, keep going. You're on a roll.
If I start to go too fast, just holler at me. No. So that was one that I've definitely tried to incorporate. And, you know, I think there's a ton of, ton of value in something like that. You know, I've seen, in batting cages, for example, guys will talk about, they set up the cage to be like target practice, basically. Let's put up different things in the cage or set up tape in a way where now guys, you create a competition out of it. So guys are, again, they're focused on competing. They're focused on being externally focused, and they're not so worried about their hands or anything like that. They're just focused on executing the task. And that's one that I've seen with hitters that I think there's, and guys get excited about it. You create a game out of it. And you can do that on the field as well. But, those are a few when it comes to focus. I think the other side of it, is there's a lot of, more attention over the last few years, and it's been around for a very, very long time, but in the last few years, the attention towards it has grown as, mindfulness, practices and techniques, and, you know, how, again, kind of like Joe Maddon, it's talking about the importance of players kind of being in the present moment. And, you know, I think that there's some ways that coaches can kind of help create what I call like kind of like a mental warm-up. You know, guys have a very usually structured or, go to physical warm-up that they complete. But there's also, I think, a lot of value in creating a mental warm-up and a way for guys to just kind of become grounded, be in the moment. And there's some different techniques that you can use to kind of help get them there. You know, we talk a lot about, there's like kind of the three questions that you can ask a player, like, you know, what do I see? What do I hear? What do I feel? And you'd be amazed, like, you know, these players are playing, you know, in Major League Baseball, they're playing over 100 games at, or I guess if you go home and away, maybe not that many, but you're playing a significant amount of games at this one venue. But like, there's sometimes there's things that you've been at the ballpark so much, but there's things in the environment, there's things at that stadium that maybe you've never actually paid attention to. And so asking them about that and getting them to just be more engaged in kind of their daily work helps them train that their muscle, that attention muscle. And it's basically like a rep, like a physical rep that they're getting to kind of strengthen that. So, I think that's another thing that can become really useful. And there's some different like visual aids that guys can do. So things like, you know, Ken talks a lot about like the circle. So an infielder can, you know, actually draw a circle in front of them that they might use for their like kind of pre-pitch routine. And every time you're stepping into the circle, and that's you being in the here and now and being focused and being engaged on the task. And I think that's a skill that you have to train. And I think coaches can definitely help encourage that and give players an opportunity to practice that in different ways.
All right, I'm going to make a comment here, and then I just want you to tell me, you know, good or bad, and either way, because this is a learning experience. One area, you know, when you start talking about, and then I'll get to the question too. When you started talking about, you know, the target hitting and also the targets on the catcher, so that way the focus stays on the target and all that. If I'm a beginner, if I'm a new coach, if I'm a coach that doesn't know the game of baseball, doesn't know any game, what I'm hearing is, what you're doing is very fundamental, is taking away the process of thinking of what you're doing and trying to accomplish what you're supposed to do. In other words, you're getting them to forget all their mechanics, because a lot of times that's what players think about. I know I did, and that's what messed me up all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, as you say that too, Pete, one of the things that I think is really important, and I try to be very careful in not speaking in, you know, absolutes and those types of things. But like, there, for some guys, without question, being more internally focused or something with their mechanics, for some guys that can work really well, you know. And I think that's really important, and that's like that goes to the art of coaching, right? Is being mm-hmm. able to recognize which players fit that mold, and which players does that work. And then, you know, as you're maybe working with a guy, and you'd be like, you know, shoot, I've tried all these different things, and everything I'm saying, this player still maybe isn't quite grasping it. That's where I think for sure, you know, maybe starting to kind of shift where their focus is becomes mm-hmm. Just another tool that in your tool belt that you can potentially go to. So I think it's a great point on your behalf of like, there is a time and a place for being internally focused and focusing on your mechanics without question. And I think one of the things that we've been talking about a little bit too is like, how does that change leading up to maybe game time? You know, in other words, like maybe when you first get to the ballpark, for example, we talked about this at IMG a lot. Maybe when you first get to the ballpark, that's when you start to develop things like your feel, and you start to maybe work on some of the mechanical things, hitting off a tee, whatever it might be. But as it gets closer to a game, that's where usually your focus usually will start to shift more to being external. And you want to try to replicate more of what you might be seeing come game time. And so I think with anything, there's a balance to it. And that just goes back to, you know, the art of coaching and understanding your players.
Zach, thanks for clearing that up. Well said. I clearly understand it very well. You know, and it's interesting because I'm asking you the question from my perspective as a player, which was one too mechanical. So yeah, as coaches, to understand, you know, which one needs to be used and at what time. Boy, very well said. I love it. Now, let me ask you this. You know, we talk about these techniques when we're talking about all the different things. You know, you even said, you know, see, hear, and feel, you know, warm-ups, Now, I want to revert back to the beginning of the show when we talked about failure. You know, we can talk all day about how to deal with failure, but then if it's not introduced into the practice and how do I deal with it? And you did mention a few things about it, but I want to really get into it. How does a coach, or what are some of the things coaches can do within their practice specifically that allows players, and I'll give you an example, a player, I'll give you a simple one. The player strikes out, throws his helmet, throws his bat, he's mad, he comes in the dugout. You know, that's, I would assume that's something that you've got to start to learn how to deal with that in practice. You can't learn to deal with that in the game.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, 100%. And I think some of that goes back to, as a coach, like, can you find the parts of the game that you can translate into practice and you can actually practice it a little bit? Like, can you kind of figure out what those things are? So that, don't know if I've explained that well. So I'll give you an example. Was thinking the other day about like a pinch hitter, right? Like a pinch hitter is gotta be, it's one of the toughest tasks in all of sports, to come in usually when you're not hot, you're not loose. And typically it's in a situation later in the game where, you know, it's quote unquote, the big moment and teams counting on you, et cetera. So, you know, obviously you may not be able to recreate, I think, all of those variables that go into that, but one of the things that I think becomes really interesting is, are there things though that you can potentially pull out? And I'm not saying you do this all the time, but one of the things, for example, is like maybe one day for batting practice, you totally randomize it of which guy it's his turn to go step into the box and execute. And, you know, the best hitters in the game, for example, are only seeing, you know, maybe four pitches per at bat. You know, sometimes our batting practice is 7-8 plus pitches, which, you know, is a very small percentage of the at bats they're seeing in a game. So can you basically randomly put a guy in a situation that's very similar to what they might be asked to do in a game setting, and now you've only got three pitches to try and execute it in? And there's maybe some consequence in there. That's where I think you can build in like competition and things where, you know, your teammates are counting on you a little bit, to try to recreate some of that. So I think that's one way is trying to take elements of the game that we sometimes don't realize that, we're not actually practicing, and let's figure out how we can do that. There was a really good example of this, at the ABCA convention with Point Loma's pitching coach, I believe it's Justin James, and he talked about, you know, one of the things that guys struggle with as relievers is coming into the game hot when, you know, you haven't maybe had your full opportunity to run through all of your routine. You know, guys have a really short amount of time to sprint down to the pen and get loose. And then boom, you go out to the field and it's go time. Like, I think stuff like that, I love, because that's not easy. It's really difficult. And if you can get guys to practice that, they're going to make mistakes. But if we can create some opportunities for them to do it in a practice setting, and then have let them discover some tools that they can go to kind of help better either slow themselves down. Like maybe they start to have to work on their breath a little bit, or they find something that allows them to make sure that they're locked in when that moment comes, or that they're ready. That's where I think you can start to see, you know, ways where guys are going to get more comfortable dealing with failure because they're going to be a little more prepared for it.
You know what?
If that makes sense.
And I'll tell you what, I'd love to hear this because, you know, when we're talking about this, as far as a practice situation, you know, coaches, we can sit down and analyze prior to practices, because we know a lot of things that players struggle with within games, you know, and then instill some of these things within our practice. So an example would be if I'm, you know, defense is very important, and defense happens a lot, obviously, you know, and errors happen and missed throws and all that. So something relating to that situation, when a player misses a ground ball, when a player overthrows a player or a cutoff, you know, how do you, what are some recommendations of training aspects that they can use within a practice to deal with that so they know how to deal with it in a game?
Sure, sure. And yeah, I think one of the things that initially comes to mind is, you know, that's again, the three levels of kind of maybe mastering the mental game. That first piece is the learn it. So sharing with them, what are some tools that you can go to in those moments? You know, what are some strategies that you can rely on or kind of hang your hat on to kind of help you reset? You know, so one of the things that I had a colleague talk a lot about is sometimes it's helpful to have like a physical cue, something that you can do physically to kind of let go of a situation or a mistake. So Ken Revisa, you know, heads of baseball, they used to talk about, you know, you'd pick up a piece of dirt and you would toss it and let go of it. You got one of the things that I love is, you know, 90% of the hats that we wear in this game have a little button on top. You know, that's like your reset button. You know, you make a mistake and boom, you tap your head and that's like you hitting the reset button and you're shifting your perspective. So I think on one hand, you sharing with players some tools, some ways that they can potentially kind of help themselves recover and reset after a mistake is important. And then the big thing I think is encouraging them to practice it, you know, and if a player, for example, if I spend time getting to know my infielders and I learn that, hey, when I feel like the game is starting to speed up on me or when I make a mistake, this is what I go to kind of help me get back on track. If I as a coach know that, then when I'm watching our guys take, you know, live reads or something like that during batting practice, I can be on the lookout for it. I can reinforce it and I can, you know, tell guys, you know, hey, did you, you know, I noticed that on that one particular ground ball, you're kind of looking at your glove for a little while and, you know, body language might not have been, you know, all that great. So, you know, what did you do to reset yourself? Did you go to your reset in that situation? I think those are good moments for coaches to understand is helping our players understand what our players like to do in those situations to kind of help them reset. Like a pitcher on the mound, we talk about, you know, if you're carrying the last pitch with you and your mind isn't ready to go and execute the next pitch, then you shouldn't be on the rubber. You need to step off the rubber, you know, and whatever that might be, you might rub the baseball, you might go to the grass and just kind of turn your back on the mound, whatever it is. I think if coaches can be aware of that, then we can start to reinforce that. And, you know, we can reinforce it in our bullpens. You know, sometimes we get into a habit where, and we're in a time crunch. So we feel like we have to make practice very efficient, very quick, which is great in a lot of ways, but also as a result, sometimes you lose the parts of the game that, where you're tested the most mentally. You know, baseball, the average length between pitches is like 20 seconds at the professional level. So, you know, but our bullpens, very rarely is a guy delivering a pitch with 20 seconds in between each throw. And not saying you do that every time, but maybe, okay, hey, today, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make sure our pins are more game-like and we're going to test you. And if you make a bad throw or you know, you don't execute a pitch, you got to sit with it for a little bit. You gotta spend some time figuring out, okay, what am I going to do to make it that adjustment that I need? And I think there's some ways that we can do that and how we set up drills and parts of practice.
All right. I'm going to throw this at you because I've heard both sides of the argument. I go out to the pitcher and I don't want him to do something specifically. You know, an example would be, you hear this all the time at coaching seminars, you know, don't throw the ball. Don't throw this guy a fastball inside. Now, is that a good thing to say, or is that maybe a not good thing, or does that depend on the type of player that we're dealing with at that time?
Sure. Yeah. I tend to go on the side of, you know, I want you to focus on what you're trying to do, what your goal is, not what could go wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's a really important difference is our brains, like the way we're wired and the way we think, we're incredible, like storytellers. And it's very easy for us to start spiraling kind of out of control. And You know, things can just twist very quickly. And so for me, I tend to go on the side of, rather than you focus on what could go wrong, I want you to focus on what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, sometimes for a guy, you know, for some pitchers, that might be that they need to see themselves in their mind or through their eyes executing that pitch before it happens. Now that's a tough thing to do when it's the, you know, again, you only got 15, 20 seconds in between pitches, but that's, you got to kind of figure out what you can do in those moments to kind of create that and make sure that you are focused on whatever it is that you're trying to execute. So that's probably where I would generally go with that.
But like you said, if you practice those things in your bullpen, those situations, the more you do that, you know, the more game-like they are, the better prepared you're going to be.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. And, you know, again, yeah, I'm all for, you know, I'm not a huge fan of like the term gamers, you know, the guys who, you know, they show up at 7 o'clock when it's game time and they just, you know, and maybe for some guys, I don't know, maybe for some guys that's a thing, but I think generally you would find the more you dig into it, those are guys that they're very intentional about how they prepare themselves. And there's, you know, there's purpose behind it and they're practicing in a way that then allows them to be comfortable in those situations in a game and execute those skills on demand.
All right, the pressure's on here, and we're getting close to the end, but what we're going to do at the end, Zach, so you know, because, you know, there's so many things we could talk about, and it's more important what you can tell our audience and not necessarily always what my questions are. So at the end, I'm going to kind of open it up and say, you know, Zach, you know, I know there's things out there that you wanted to talk about, and I'm going to let you roll and talk about those things because those are important that we obviously have missed. But before we do that, a little pressure here. I want to see how as a mental coach, you know, skills coach, how you deal with the pressure as a
student, take on my feet.
And as a student of Ken Revisa and as, you know, being with Ken for a while, and obviously now you're with the Diamondbacks, I threw this out at Ken 15 years ago. I figured it out on my own. Once in a while, I come up with some ideas and, you know, working with players, I started to figure out, why don't I start in practice making guys drop baseballs. You know, first reaction was, well, they already do that. But then when I started to have them feel the ball, drop it, pick it up and throw it, I realized two things as I did this over the years. One, it seemed to start to teach them how to deal with the mistake they just made and finish that play. But then the more I went on, I really realized that in order for them to drop the ball, they actually had to field it first. So I was actually teaching them how to field it, and I didn't realize that. Good, bad, and different.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I have not heard that one before. You're really making me think on my feet. I love it.
we could save that for another time, but I want to throw that out yet a little bit, simply because you know the easy part was, Zach, you know, if I practice dropping the ball in a game, I'm going to realize when I do drop it, how to finish the play. That's what I was really trying to get at. But then I started realizing that in order for them to actually drop the ball, they started concentrating on fielding it better.
Yeah, sure. No, I think what's, you reminded me of, you know, I had a person. So this is where I'll bring this back here, but like, you know, there's perception a lot of times, like visualization is a really popular skill that we talk a lot about. A lot of players use it. And there's this kind of adage that, you know, you're only supposed to kind of visualize seeing yourself be successful. And there's a few people that I've heard in our field talk a little bit about, they actually have their athletes sometimes visualize themselves getting thrown off a little bit, or, you know, being challenged or not performing well, just so that they can practice their response to it. You know, and I don't know if I'm in a position to say that's one way is the only way. I don't think of it sure. Like that, but I think what you're getting at a little bit is, I think you're, by doing that, you are getting them to practice their response. All right, boom, I drop a ball. It didn't go the way I want, but am I going to let that compound into another mistake? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be able to, in that moment, reset and you know, continue the play and not kind of give up on it. So from that point of view, I like it in a sense. Now, again, if that's all we did, I don't know. I'm not quite sure on that. But I think that there's something there in a sense of, at least personally, I think that there's value in potentially us practicing those things that either in our mind or whatever the case might be of, okay, something doesn't quite go the way I want it to. Well, boom, how am I going to respond? And then the closer you get to competition, though, that's where I would say make sure that we're focusing more on what we want to have happen and not what could go wrong.
Awesome.
Would be maybe, yeah.
And I'll throw this at you, too, with some young players. You know, one of the areas they have a tough time dealing with is balls and strikes, you know, and bad calls. So that's why I like, you know, within our practices, I like our catchers calling the pitches because, you know, they're going to make a ton of mistakes on balls and strikes at times. Not a ton, but they're going to make mistakes more than the umpire would. And then sooner or later, players are going to have to start dealing with that. So if they don't deal with it in practice, how are they going to deal with it in a game?
Sure. No, 100%. I've heard stories of even professional teams doing that, you know, bringing in an umpire and, you know, making sure that they're very intentionally, you know, shortening the strike zone or shrinking the strike zone and things like that, just to pinch a guy a little bit. And very quickly, you know, guys get animated about that, you know, and it's a good way to help guys learn, okay, well, boom, how are you going to respond to it? And because ultimately it's very easy in those moments to start to play the blame game. It's very easy in those moments to start to go down that route of having a complaint or an excuse or whatever the case might be. But ultimately, that's usually not very productive. So let's figure out how you're going to be able to respond in a productive sense to help yourself and most importantly, probably help the team.
You know, and we hope by this show, what we're trying to do, and we're not the only baseball podcast out there. We hope that every baseball podcast reaches as many, even, you know, younger coaches or parents along with their audience, simply because, you know, if kids don't start or if coaches do not start learning these concepts that you're talking about and implementing them in their practices, then the players aren't going to get any better. Because, you know, here's my one last question for me, and then we'll get into a couple of things that you want to mention. You know, when's the best time to start implementing this, the ideal time? Is it the young ages? And if you don't get them when they're young, hopefully we keep them in the game long enough to where when they're older, we can at least begin the mental game. I mean, when's too late? Is there ever a time that's too late? When's the best time to start? Where does this all fall into place?
Sure. Yeah. I think when it comes to teaching kids about, you know, the mental side of the game, I mean, personally, I'm a proponent of, you know, really the earlier the better, you know, and there's different tools that I think you'd probably prioritize in a sense for those younger players in particular. And, but to your point also about, like, first and foremost, making sure that they have, you know, a healthy relationship with the game itself and that there's fun in it, you know, and I think that's something where, you know, some of the better youth coaches that I've been around, they do just a tremendous job of creating practices or environments where kids are excited, you know, about going to practice that day. And even in a sense of sometimes they're doing a drill or a thing that might be kind of challenging in a sense, but the best coaches, I think, find ways to make those fun. And I think you can actually do the same thing with mental skills in a sense. And so, you know, from when it comes to mental skills with the younger ages, I think that's a skill set that you can start to practice and hone, you know, from a pretty early age. But also at the same time, you know, as the umpire says, play ball, like it's supposed to be fun. It's not work ball. And so I think that's always a one important thing to kind of keep in mind as well, especially with the younger kids.
All right. Fantastic. And Zach, let's end it with a bang. This one, you know, this is a couple of things that maybe, you know, you wanted to really talk about or mention to our audience of coaches, players, and parents here in the U.S. and around the world. And, you know, give you your time and then we'll finish it off from there.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that when we've talked a lot about failure, right? And that's a big one. And you know, one of the things that I hear a lot from coaches, like if we were to kind of poll coaches about, you know, what are the qualities that you look for in like an ideal baseball player, like coach, like baseball, we talk a lot about makeup, you know, what's a player's makeup? Well, okay, well, what goes into that? You know, this what I'm more kind of interested in. And one of the things I hear often is confidence. And to me, like confidence is such an interesting thing because although I certainly think it's important to a degree, I also think it can be, you know, really overrated in a sense. You know, and we'll use kind of the analogy of like, you know, there's actually a ton of parallels between poker and baseball, you know, and it's like if I'm playing poker against somebody and I have pocket aces, you know, I'm sitting pretty good, you know, and I can feel really confident in my and how I'm going to play that hand. And most likely I'm not going to have as much problem going all in, you know, with my chips in that particular situation. And I think the, you know, the baseball equivalent is when you're on the mound or you're in the box and you've got your A game, you know, and everything is there. You feel good. You're seeing the ball well, whatever the case might be. And I think where you start to see guys can separate themselves is, you know, how can you play it when you don't have that in your hand? You know, when you've got the offsuit, non-face cards and, you know, you're not quite 100% that day. You know, you're throwing and your arm feels like you're throwing underwater, whatever the case might be. So I think on one hand, I don't want to muddy this, but I think in some ways it's as a coach, it's important for us to kind of fuel the confidence that we have for our players, but at the same time, also help them understand that if you don't feel confident, that's okay. There's a tremendous book. It's like top five all time for me that I reference is The Confidence Gap. And it kind of provides a bit of an alternative approach to how we generally have thought about confidence. And they talk a lot about, you know, confidence. There's two definitions. One is it's a feeling of certainty that you can accomplish whatever, and or it's an act of trust. And those are two actually very different things. And I think one of the things that I hear a lot of times is you see players who put in a great deal of work, who have done the preparation, who then they get into that competitive setting and they unfortunately just aren't able to put it together because they don't trust the work that they've put in. They haven't trusted the process. Mm. And I think that's something that as coaches, it's important for us to kind of remind guys that, you know, you may not always feel confident, but you can still act in a manner that is confident. And I think that's one thing that I really believe in. I tend to try to, I think that's a tough one because I think, and again, baseball is a game of failure. And when you fail, that's going to hinder, you know, your confidence generally. And so, that's one where you want to fuel it in different ways. And there's different tools that we can use in the mental skill space to kind of help, you know, increase a player's confidence. But at the same time, then when it comes to game time, regardless, it's about helping our players just trust it and reminding them again of, you know, hey, you can do this because of XYZ that you've already done in practice or in training and how you've prepared for this moment.
All right. Fantastic. Great way to end the show. That is Zach Brandon, mental skills coordinator for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Zach, gotta thank you so much for coming on the show. Want to wish you a great season this year with the Diamondbacks, except when you play the Chicago Cubs. But you know, we again, can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Pete, it was a pleasure chatting with you. And again, very grateful for the opportunity. And I'm excited to continue to see your influence spread in the game of baseball again, not just here in the U.S., but also across the world. So thanks for everything you're doing for the game.
All right. Thank you, Zach. And folks, follow Zach. I do on Twitter at MVP_mindset. I'm sure you can ask him questions through Twitter. We'll have all the information on our show notes. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the show tonight. Don't forget, go to iTunes and Stitcher. If you love the show, give us a rating. That just helps the show get out. Take all our social media. We're on Twitter. We're on social. We're on Facebook. We're all over. We got some great things for you. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group, and also Zach Brandon with the Arizona Diamondbacks, their mental skills coordinator. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. Have a great coaching day, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.